Moral reasoning and clinical ethics. How do you define it? How do you measure it? That's the subject for this edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information on the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. A couple of individuals join us from the Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences. Dr. Jason Wasserman is Assistant Professor of Bioethics, and Dr. Shannon Stevenson recently graduated with her DO and a Master's in Bioethics. So, Shannon, tell us about the study. Why did you think it was important to do a study like this?
Looking back on my master's degree, I sort of wondered what impact it was going to have as I went through and practiced as a physician, possibly served on a committee. How important was my ethics education, and how will I end up applying this information as I go forward? And so I was interested to see how that was manifesting now in clinical ethics among, you know, people who may have a master's or a majority. It turns out that do not.
And then, Jason, this was part of another study that had been done before, correct?
Right. The study began with Cassie Claxton, who is a medical student at KCUMB and was a bioethics student last year. And both she and Shannon kind of had relatively different questions, but that had some commonality such that they could both use the data. And those questions centered around the connection between theory and practice, which is something that I'm also interested in, and sort of more specifically, how does theory translate to practice, if at all? And do the theories that we learn in bioethics education in the classroom really have, do they translate to practice, which most people would suspect that they don't, but there's not a lot of data on that. Or even do they contextualize even the thinking of practice, even if they don't sort of directly inform how we practice? Are they even relevant concepts? And I think that was fundamentally what both of those students were interested in, as I am.
And jumping ahead a little bit to the results of the study and a comment you made with the Center for Practical Bioethics, or Ethics Committee Consortium, just finished meeting this evening. You said there's somewhat of a gap between theory and practice. Talk about that a little bit.
I mean, in general, when we look at how people are taught ethics in a sort of normative theory basis and sense of looking at rules or looking at consequences and looking back on serious ethical theorists that we all study, there's a question on whether or not learning that theory is going to impact the way that we reason. And if it does, is that what we desire? Or perhaps is it that we're looking to learn a bigger picture of critical thinking through studying those theories? And maybe that's what we're trying to look for in this study, and might be what we found.
Well, and then you were looking for predictors of moral reasoning and how people went about it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. For the study, we essentially looked mainly at PhDs, like a person who had a standalone PhD, not an MD PhD, versus people who had experience years in healthcare, and we're looking to see if there was any prediction of using one of a moral reasoning paradigm. We were mainly looking at either using rule-based or consequence-based reasoning, if they used those consistently. And what we found essentially was that the PhD, or having a higher education within ethics, is the supposition of the folks with the PhDs, did not correlate to using any or either of the paradigms consistently, whereas increased experience years in medicine did. So sort of showing us that it gives us a question, I guess, on whether or not consistency is what we're looking for, or perhaps inconsistency is a better measure of people who have that in-depth ethical theory education, in the sense of the PhDs were inconsistent, which made us think that they have a lot more education in ethical theory and were able to use it a little more nuanced to the situation, whereas perhaps folks with increased experience years in medicine or increased experience years in ethical situations are more reacting to a common way that they've always reasoned, and that's why they tend to be more consistent.
So am I hearing you say that there was really somewhat of a lack of common denominators that you found between how people approached it and what kind of education they had?
Yeah, I think that there were very few predictors of how one was going to reason. And, you know, these sort of paradigms of deontological reasoning, which is duty-based or principled, and teleological reasoning, which focuses on outcomes and consequences, really go back to the sort of Enlightenment. And as practical bioethics has sort of asserted itself as in some people's estimation, a fundamentally different enterprise than theoretical or normative ethics, it's become increasingly suspect to me that whether these Enlightenment paradigms that were born centuries ago have any bearing on sort of that the practice of bioethics, or what, or at least it's questionable what their relationship is. And at the same time, they have all these questions about the education and the preparation and the efficacy and the effectiveness of hospital ethics committees, and there are all these calls to educate them more, to educate their members more. And when we look at what education consists of, it largely employs these paradigms. And so we're in this sort of weird cyclical process where, you know, people that in practice, people on hospital ethics committees, apparently were not employing these paradigms, and our study shows that they're not, or at least not in the way that theory would predict. And at the same time, there's all these calls to improve education, which is based in these paradigms. And there's a very odd relationship between those. And the fundamental finding, I think, is probably the most striking in this study, which is from a theoretical standpoint, you would predict that someone who employs deontological reasoning to answer ethical dilemmas would be less likely to employ also consequentialist reasoning. And the two scales that we used indeed function independently. So one could theoretically rank high on deontology and consequentialism, but theory would say that they should not. And in fact, they do. We predicted that deontological reasoning and consequentialist reasoning should be negatively correlated, in other words, inverse. And in fact, it was positively correlated, which flies in the face of normative ethics and its kind of common sense understanding of ethical reasoning.
Well, you were taking a look at a couple of influences that I picked up on in your presentation, faith and experience. Mm-hmm. And that folds into what you just talked about, right? And that's different from ethics committee to ethics committee, individual to individual, institution to institution. Would it be fair to say that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. What this shows is that there are a lot of influences, or at least people describe a lot of influences on how they reason, but education does not seem to rank high among them. Life experience ranks very high. Religiosity did not, insofar as people did not typically report deriving their views on what is right and what is wrong from a religious standpoint, or at least their responses indicate that they believe there's a basis in morality that exists outside of their religious beliefs. But they did rely on religiosity heavily to deal with stressful life situations. So it seemed to be a personal resource, but not a moral beacon for them. Where that leaves us is that there are these really complex and diverse sets of influences on how people reason, and these calls for improving hospital ethics committees solely through education start to be called into question at that point, because education was the lowest ranked influence, according to people. If education was working, we should see consistency in moral reasoning patterns among PhDs, for example, if those classic paradigms are in fact intact, and we don't see any of that. Instead, what we see is life experience ranks the most high in terms of influences, and the paradigms don't seem to translate into practice the way we think about them in theory.
Shannon, would this tell you that there needs to be more study in this regard?
Oh, for sure. That's part of the end of my project. I talked a lot about how more study could focus on a lot of the questions that this project brought up, as any good project does. You'll answer some things and obviously expose lots of things that need answers. And I think, you know, looking more specifically at types of education that people who are surveyed receive, which is one thing we didn't necessarily look at in the ethics side. We were mainly looking at what degree they had or things like that, but not necessarily asking what sort of ethics training have you had. Say you don't have a master's degree, what have you gone through? And I think that would be something to add to another study to just sort of get a better idea of what education effect is outside of, say, sitting in a classroom and learning moral theory, because there's certainly lots of mini courses and ethics rounds and ways that people learn when they sit on a committee, and there's really no data right now to show or to demonstrate what impact that has on how people reason.
You came up with a couple of interesting terms from your study, and a couple of that I picked up on were appropriators and applicators. Explain what you mean by that.
So I'm actually pulling those terms from two authors, Baker and McCullough, and it's from an article I read by Johnson, who's kind of responding to a paper that they had written. And they're basically talking about an applicator is probably the easiest one to explain, which just means somebody who would take, say, deontology or a rule-based system and then apply it to every ethical issue that arises. So you would make a rule and you'd have a policy, and no matter what came across your table, you'd use that policy to come to a decision. Whereas an appropriator and most theoretical work says that a hospital ethics committee members are appropriators, would then take several different theories or several different ideas of how to reason ethically and sort of nuance parts of that and try to find a way to apply that to a certain situation. And that's kind of what we saw, as already mentioned, in the sense that people tend to use several different types of reasoning, not just one reasoning across the board.
So, Jason, knowing the results of this study and potentially others that come down the pike, why is it important for us to know this information, and how do we go about using it?
Well, I think the study raises criticisms and important questions for both theory and practice. On the theoretical side, it's been an open question for a long time about how is theory informing practice? Does it have any relationship with practice? But from the practice side, as we see calls for increased standardization, what that's implying is there's going to have to be an increased sort of pedagogical, i.e. theoretical framework in which this education is going to have to, on which it's going to have to be built. And so from both sides, I think theory needs to abandon these enlightenment paradigms and sort of reinvent itself as something that is equal in complexity to the practical situations that are faced in the contemporary period that we find ourselves in. And from the practice side, there's going to have to be the development of a complex a system, a pedagogical system for training and standardization that, again, is equal to that the complexity of the moral reasoning and moral dilemmas that we face. So, I basically think it's a call to sort of re-examine moral reasoning in and of itself, insofar as theory is supposed to sort of inform practice about that, but clearly is not. And practice, in terms of standardizing and coming together from to form a common basis, is going to have to invent that. So I think that, it really points the way, it opens the door to and really demands that we address some of these fundamental issues in ethics. Because for too long, these enlightenment paradigms have just been drawn down and utilized, even though they're hundreds of years old, even though they have a tenuous connection to the real world. If you asked someone on a bioethics committee today, about their training, it would be Beecham and Childress. It would be basically rooted in Kant, Mill, and Rawls. And I think that this raises questions about whether those are fundamentally applicable anymore.
Dr. Jason Wasserman is Assistant Professor of Bioethics at the Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences. Dr. Shannon Stevenson recently graduated from that institution with her DO and a master's in bioethics. We appreciate your time and good luck.
Thank you very much.
My name is Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.